Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, July 24th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes only one name, Suzanne Marie Feister, 67, of Phoenix. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the person just listed in today's obituaries. Now, we're going to turn to the business section of the paper. We have a couple of articles there. The first one is, New Astronomer CEO Addresses Scandal. This was written by Anthony Robledo for the USA Today. The new CEO of the data tech company called Astronomer has addressed the infamous Coldplay kiss cam scandal that prompted the last person in his position to resign. Co-founder Pete DeJoy assumed the role of interim CEO after a viral video reportedly showed CEO Andy Byron and the company's chief people officer embracing on the Jumbotron during a July 16th Coldplay show, according to the New York Times. Following the scandal, the company announced via post to X and LinkedIn that Byron had tendered his resignation. In a new LinkedIn post titled Moving Forward at Astronomer, DeJoy broke his silence on the controversy with a more positive take on the situation. He wrote in the July 21st post, quote, "The events of the past few days have received a level of media attention that few companies, let alone startups, in our small corner of the data and AI world, ever encounter. The spotlight has been unusual and surreal for our team, and while I would never have wished for it to happen like this, Astronomer is now a household name," unquote. The company has persevered, according to DeJoy. He wrote, quote, "From starting a software company in Cincinnati, Ohio, to keeping the lights on through the collapse of the bank that held all our cash, to scaling from 30 to 300 people during a global pandemic that demanded we do it all without ever being in the same room, and yet we're still here," unquote. Byron has yet to publicly address the controversy or his leave of absence at Astronomer. The company has dismissed a recent fabricated statement impersonating Byron. The viral moment shows a man and a woman embracing each other before quickly letting go and ducking out of view when the kiss cam put them in the spotlight at the Foxborough, Massachusetts stadium. Uh-oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy. That's a quote from Coldplay lead singer Chris Martin, who quipped that at the time. The company did not respond to USA Today's request for comment. And that was the article, New Astronomer CEO Addresses Scandal. Our second article from the business section, U.S. sanctions could hit Latin American farms. This was written by Anna Mano and Cassandra Garrison for the Reuters News Group, and it comes from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Latin American farmers are in for a rough ride if the United States slaps secondary sanctions on buyers of Russian exports, such as the fertilizers essential for cash crops from Mexican avocados to Brazilian soybeans and corn. For farm powerhouse Brazil, which covered about a third of its fertilizer demand with $3.7 billion of imports from Russia last year, there is virtually no alternative to fill the gap if those flows are halted, according to experts and industry players. Moscow's 2022 invasion of Ukraine triggered stockpiling of Russian fertilizer in the region. Prices soared briefly, but trade has now normalized. Plans to boost domestic fertilizer production in Mexico and Brazil have made slow progress in the face of relatively cheap Russian imports. Shipments to Brazil, the world's largest producer of soybeans, sugar, and coffee, well, those shipments rose nearly 30% in the first half of this year, according to the Russian Fertilizer Producers Association. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte singled out Brazil among a handful of countries that could be hit very hard by sanctions for doing business with Russia as part of President Donald Trump's renewed push to end the war in Ukraine. Fresh sanctions targeting Russian fertilizer imports could, quote, render soybean and corn production inviable, unquote. That's according to Lucas Bieber, vice president of the Brazilian grain farming group called APROJOSA. Mexico also imported more than $580 million of fertilizers last year from Russia, its largest supplier, according to government data. Potential U.S. sanctions could pose a big problem for farmers there as well. Raul Ortega said, quote, it would affect Mexico's purchases from Russia of different fertilizers, particularly urea, which is the most widely used in crops like corn, sorghum, wheat, and even avocado. A former director of international affairs for Mexico's agriculture ministry, Ortega, warned of a drop-off in the quality of fertilizers available if the Russian imports disappear. And that could weaken avocado production and send prices higher for U.S. consumers. The United States accounts for more than 80% of Mexico's total avocado exports. That's a market worth more than $3 billion last year, according to U.S. government data. Ortega said, quote, the price of avocados would increase if producers have to use other alternatives or find fertilizers that are imported from sources other than Russia, unquote. Now, Russia is also the top fertilizer supplier for Colombia, which is another key producer of fruits, flowers, and coffee to the United States. Russia provides about a quarter of Colombia's fertilizer imports, according to government data. And the World Bank has identified fertilizer cost as a driver of food inflation in Central America. Even fertilizer companies that have already cut ties with Russian suppliers, like the U.S.-based Mosaic, expressed fears that further trade disruptions with one of the world's top three fertilizer producers could feed volatility. Eduardo Monteiro, Mosaic's country manager in Brazil, which contributes 40% of the company's global revenue, Eduardo said, quote, potential discussions involving retaliation against countries that operate with Russia only end up further aggravating the situation in terms of pricing, unquote. He said geopolitical tensions delayed sales to Brazilian farmers for the next crop cycle, which could compromise timely fertilizer deliveries for such major crops like soybeans, which farmers plant from September. But the privately held fertilizer maker Eurochem and Fertipar, which supply their Brazilian processing plants with imports from Russia, according to trade data, they declined or they did not reply to questions about potential sanctions. Brazil has touted plans to nearly halve its reliance on foreign fertilizers. Mexico aims to boost domestic production from 33% to 80% of local demand. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and Mexico's President Claudia Sheinbaum have both prodded state oil companies Petrobras and Pemex to ramp up fertilizer production. They have made slow progress, however. In Brazil's case, efforts were hampered by factors including lack of funding, potentially costly mineral resources, and expensive natural gas, which is key to producing nitrogen fertilizers. Now, that problem could be partly mitigated by Brazil Potash Corporation, if it starts to mine for potash in the Brazilian Amazon, which should happen once the infrastructure and permitting are in place. And in Mexico, the debt-laden Pemex has struggled over the years to make fertilizers a profitable business. Unfazed by local competition, U.S. sanctions, or European bans, Russian fertilizer producers say they expect to raise their global market share to 25% by the year 2030, and they're relying largely on sales to developing BRICS nations, including Brazil, India, and China. And that was U.S. sanctions could hit Latin American farms. The third article from the business section of the paper, Meta, X, LinkedIn, appeal VAT claim. This is written by Emilio Parodi for Reuters News Group from Milan, Italy. U.S. tech giants Meta, X, and LinkedIn have lodged an appeal against an unprecedented value-added tax claim by Italy that it could influence tax policy across the 27-nation European Union. According to four sources with direct knowledge of the matter on July 21st. This is the first time that Italy has failed to reach a settlement agreement after bringing tax cases against tech companies, thus resulting in a full-fledged judicial tax trial being launched. Now, according to the sources, this came about because the case went beyond agreeing on a settlement figure and sought to establish a broader approach focused on how social networks provide access to their services. Italian tax authorities argue that free user registrations with X and LinkedIn and Meta platforms should be seen as taxable transactions, as they imply the exchange of a membership account in return for a user's personal data. Italy is claiming $1.03 billion from Meta, $14.7 million from X, and around $164 million from LinkedIn. Now, Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, and Elon Musk's social network X, and Microsoft's LinkedIn filed their appeals with a first-instance tax court after mid-July, when the deadline for responding to a tax assessment notice, which is issued by Italy's revenue agency in March, passed. According to several experts consulted by Reuters, the Italian approach could affect almost all companies, from airlines to supermarkets to publishers, who link access to free services on their sites to users' acceptance of profiling cookies. It could also eventually be extended across the entire EU, European Union. In a statement to Reuters, Meta said that it had cooperated, quote, fully with the authorities on our obligations under EU and local law, unquote. But it added that the company, quote, strongly disagrees with the idea that providing access to online platforms to users should be subject to VAT, unquote. LinkedIn said it had, quote, nothing to share at this time, unquote. X did not respond to a request for comment from Reuters. Well, it is uncertain whether a full trial of the matter, which takes an average of 10 years, will go ahead. Following discussions with the three companies, Italy is preparing to seek an advisory opinion from the European Commission's VAT Committee. That committee meets twice a year. Rome aims to submit its questions for the meeting scheduled to be held in early November in order to receive the EU's comments in time for the following meeting in spring 2026. Now, the EU's Commission's VAT Committee is an independent advisory group, and while its assessment will be non-binding, a no could prompt Italy to halt the case and ultimately drop the criminal investigation by Italian prosecutors. And that was the article, Meta, X, and LinkedIn Appeal the VAT Claim. Well, we're coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, and we have finished up with the business section. Time for us to move on over to the sports section of the paper. So on the front page of the sports section, there's this picture of a Diamondbacks batter. He's got his bat resting on his shoulder. Looks like he might be standing at home plate. And the back of his jersey says Suarez, number 28. Underneath the picture, it says the Diamondbacks' Eugenio Suarez has hit 36 home runs with 86 RBIs in the 101 games that he has played this season. Underneath that picture is the big title, Deal or No Deal. And underneath that title, there are two articles. One of the articles is written by Greg Moore, and the other article is written by Bob McManaman. And Greg Moore's article is, D-backs GM Hazen should trade his best power hitter. But under Bob McManaman's article, Diamondbacks should let it ride. Keep Slugger Suarez. So we have two articles, two points of view, and it's all about Eugenio Suarez under the big article, Deal or No Deal. So we're going to start with Greg Moore. Eugenio Suarez is at the top of the National League in home runs. So, of course, the Diamondbacks should trade him. General Manager Mike Hazen said on July 20th on MLB Radio, quote, I think right now we're in a pretty precarious situation, unquote. Well, he's right. Arizona is on the edge of a tense playoff race involving about half of the National League. Hazen has until the end of July to decide whether to add talent to try to win a championship this season or whether to look for prospects to get ready for 2026 and beyond. But from here, the decision is pretty clear. Hazen should scrap this year and look to the future. The Diamondbacks just aren't good enough. This season is snakebit. They have blown more than 30 leads and lost 19 one-run games. And there are plenty of reasons. Jordan Montgomery went down with a career-threatening arm injury before opening day. Corbin Burns blew out his elbow before the All-Star break. Zach Gallen has been terribly inconsistent. The bullpen has been about as helpful as a candy-coated toothbrush and chocolate floss. Corbin Carroll and Gabriel Moreno got hit with pitches and had to sit out. Ketel Marte missed time with a hamstring injury. And then a bozo in Chicago heckled Mart about his deceased mother, and then somebody burglarized his house over the All-Star break. Bottom line, this isn't the kind of team that wins a World Series. And that brings us to Hazen's big decision. It's not going to be popular with fans, but he's got to make some trades. And who's got the most value? Well, we know it's Gino. Suarez has been the best power hitter in the National League for about a year. Home runs, RBIs, you name it. Trading Suarez is going to tick off a lot of fans, and it should. There's nothing more exciting than a home run, and he hits as many of them as anybody. He entered July 23rd tied with Shohei Ohtani for the league lead. But Suarez will be a free agent at the end of the season, and with his production, he is sure to command a big contract. Doesn't matter what the Diamondbacks are willing to pay him. The Dodgers, the Mets, the Yankees, the Phillies, they could easily pay more. Sure, Suarez has said that he loves Arizona, but does anyone really expect a 34-year-old on his fourth team to play for a massive discount? I wouldn't. Hazen has a similar decision to make on a few other players. Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Josh Naylor are all at the end of their contracts, and they'll be looking for a raise. Meanwhile, the club needs talented young pitchers the way tattoo shops need customers who make rash decisions. So yes, the situation is precarious, as Hazen put it. But it's really not. If you squint, the Diamondbacks are in playoff contention. But at this point, so what? Half the league is in playoff contention. And that's not just another funny over-the-top statement that readers love to hate me for. If anything, I'm downplaying the situation. In the NL, 10 of the league's 15 teams have a decent shot at the postseason. So to be a World Series contender, a club has to be hot. The Diamondbacks? are the definition of lukewarm. If Hazen doesn't make a bold move, his Diamondbacks are likely to hover around 500 until prospects like Jordan Lawler and Lou James Groover are ready to be everyday players in the big leagues. It's not a popular call, but Hazen should scrap this year and get ready for the future. His challenge is to build a sustained contender, and it's a goal he has been chasing since 2017. It's a goal the franchise has been chasing throughout its history. Maybe the Diamondbacks prove me wrong over the next several days and rattle off a win streak that makes us all say, snakes alive. But I doubt it. Suarez has 36 home runs, so of course Hazen should trade him. And that was Greg Moore's opinion piece. D-backs GM Hazen should trade his best power hitter. Now for the other side of the deal or no deal page, we have Bob McManaman. Diamondbacks should let it ride. Keep Slugger Suarez. The aura in and around the clubhouse at Chase Field was mostly quiet and reserved before the Diamondbacks took the field against the Astros on Wednesday, July 23rd. Of course, the type of music they were playing through their sound system might have had something to do with that. It was a peculiar blend of old-school instrumentals featuring soft piano and trumpet solos that you would probably expect to hear in a Las Vegas casino bar back in the 1960s. Oh, it was pleasant enough. It was just unusual. It also felt a little weird. It was like stepping into a time warp. And maybe that's not a surprise, considering that with the Major League trade deadline looming just ahead on July 31st, the Diamondbacks are either going to try to launch themselves into the future by being sellers, or go back in time and try to run this season out with what they have, making an addition or two along the way. I'm here in full support of the latter, that the Diamondbacks resist temptation and ultimately decide to keep the band together, namely slugging third baseman Eugenio Suarez. All-star outfielder Corbin Carroll told the Arizona Republic before Wednesday's game, quote, "Obviously you hope to add at the deadline and not, you know, see teammates go, but I just think we have to be realistic about the position we're in. It's on us to go win some ball games and get back in this. That's kind of where I'm at," unquote. But time, however, is quickly running out, and that warp feeling seems very real. Arizona has had an uneven but incredibly surprising season, despite dealing with a tremendous number of devastating injuries to its pitching staff. But somehow, the snakes remain alive. They just haven't been able to string together enough wins to fully convince General Manager Mike Hazen that they should be buyers at the trade deadline. They sweep a series against the St. Louis Cardinals, for instance, and then immediately they're swept by the Astros. Well, if the Diamondbacks can't turn the corner, then Hazen will do what he must, and he'll look to unload some of the club's bigger names playing on expiring contracts, like Suarez, or starting pitchers Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly, and first baseman Josh Naylor. Suarez, who entered Wednesday leading the majors with 86 RBIs and tied for second with 36 home runs, has been widely regarded as the number one trade target for clubs looking to boost their rosters for a postseason run. And those teams include the Yankees, the Mariners, the Brewers, the Tigers, the Cubs, and the Mets. A two-time All-Star from Venezuela, Suarez has often repeated his preference to remain with the Diamondbacks, saying, quote, "My heart is in Arizona. I would like to be here. I hope to stay," unquote. He said more of the same following the Diamondbacks' 4-3 loss on July 23rd, and seemed to be reflecting on his time here when it was over, as he stood alone at the railing near the home team dugout, staring out into the vastness of the stadium. He said, quote, "There's a lot of things going on in my mind. I don't know what's going to happen next week. My heart's still here. I'm still here. I'm part of this team. I feel like I'm at home. But the last 2 years in my career, it changed everything here in Arizona. I am who I am right now because of the last 2 years, being great. And it's about this team. I don't want to think about the trade deadline now because nothing has happened yet, unquote. He wants to stay. You know who else wants Gino Suarez to stay? All of his teammates. And I could tell they meant it just by the way they looked into my eyes when they said it. You can't find dishonesty in an honest man when he's telling you the truth. Outfielder Alex Thomas, when asked how Suarez had been handling all of the outside noise, said, quote, "He hasn't mentioned a thing. I haven't even heard him talk about it. He pretty much just goes about his business. He's the same guy every day, the same guy. You can't really ask more from a teammate." For me, I'm like, man, this guy is going crazy. Of course teams would want to have him on their team. So yeah, it is going to be interesting. But at the same time, I would love for him to stay and love for him to help us win and help us go to the playoffs. He definitely does give us a good chance, unquote. So as the Diamondbacks' biggest trade chip, Suarez could certainly fetch a big haul in return. They could add to the starting rotation, restock their bullpen by dealing him. But no one wants to see him go, and so far, there's been no convincing evidence that AAA prospect Jordan Lawler is ready for a full-time role at the big league level. Suarez is the best sure thing the Diamondbacks have, and they should hold on to him at all cost. If they keep him, they will keep winning. Josh Naylor said, looking me square in the eyes without even blinking once, quote, "Gino's the same guy every day, and that's what you have to be in this game. It's always happy, always outgoing, always wanting to be here with his teammates and smile and make jokes. You know, we have a really, really great group here. Everyone is awesome individually, but we're awesome together as a group. At the end of the day, it is a business. Whatever happens, happens. You just got to roll with the punches. But the relationships that you are able to build, the bond you are able to make, and the experiences you are able to have on the field and the memories, I think those are all unforgettable," unquote. Well, no one cares as much about this Diamondbacks bunch as their manager. Torey Lovullo still thinks his team can get on a hot streak and force Hazen to put his phone down. He wants to go for it without breaking things up. And that means keeping Suarez and offering him a new deal for next year and beyond. During a pregame interview session, Lovullo said, quote, "He's endeared himself to everybody in this baseball community. He's a great player. He's a great human being. We see that. It's not in anybody's control other than the front office, and that's where it should be. I told Gino, just go out there and do your job, and he has been doing that very well. The way he's performing, I think he's telling us a story, that he's able to separate it. Everybody wants to know. It seems like Gino is the one guy that is the target and a part of every conversation I've been having whenever somebody talks about this looming trade deadline," unquote. So if the Diamondbacks can get rolling on this road trip against the Pirates, Tigers, and Athletics, they should let it ride. There's no guarantee the Diamondbacks will be closer to a contender next year by swapping out established talent now for younger, more affordable hopefuls. Considering ace Corbin Burns and key relievers A.J. Puk and Justin Martinez are lost for the year and will likely miss much of next season, this club might not be ready for a possible playoff run until 2027. Stick it out with Suarez, and you still have a fighting chance with a supporting cast that includes Carroll, Ketel Marte, Geraldo Perdomo, Gabby Moreno, Brandon Pfaadt, Ryne Nelson, and more. And that was Bob McManaman's opinion. Diamondbacks should let it ride. Keep Slugger Suarez. Now our next article from the front page of the sports section. Phoenix close to securing a Formula E race in 2027. Written by Logan Brown for the Cronkite News. Gentlemen, start your electric motors. In the 34 years since Formula One left its tracks on the streets of downtown Phoenix, City officials have been working hard to bring the racing event back to the valley. While NASCAR has filled the community's craving for the sport, something new is on the horizon. Formula E, the all-electric racing championship series, is eyeing Phoenix for a place on its calendar of races around the world in Season 13, which is expected to begin in late 2026. In 2027, Valley residents could expect an electric racing event in their own backyard. Formula E CEO Jeff Dodds said during a visit to the city in March, quote, "Phoenix is one of the cities we have been talking to for some time. It's a very interesting city because it's not only a real sports city, but it's also a very vibrant economically. There's a willingness on both sides to show an interest in doing it. Now we have to crunch the numbers and look at the locations and look at the calendar in its entirety," unquote. Phoenix City Council officials and Formula E representatives declined to comment on the potential scheduling of an E Prix in Phoenix. When league executives visited the Valley, they discussed three potential routes for a race in the city. An hourglass-shaped race on Washington and Jefferson Streets around the Arizona State Capitol building was considered, as well as a route around the Arizona State Fairgrounds. However, Formula E, after a week in the Valley working alongside the Phoenix City Council and the Greater Phoenix Economic Council, showed the most interest in a track around Papago Park, according to Phoenix host committee member Brad Wright. Wright said, quote, "We're hopeful now that Formula E will add us to their annual circuit in the first quarter of 2027, unquote. However, the city of Tempe recently raised concerns about the cost of the event and denied a proposal to race at Papago Park, despite the Phoenix Host Committee's willingness to cover any expenses incurred by Tempe. So now, Phoenix is shifting gears toward new venues, including that track around the state fairgrounds. Although the decision by Tempe officials surprised the parties involved, it may not come as a shock to most Valley sports fans. Back in May of 2023, Tempe voters decided against building a new arena for Arizona's former NHL club, the Arizona Coyotes. Wright, who serves on the Greater Phoenix Economic Council Executive Board and was chairman for the Arizona Host Committee for the 2016 College Football Playoff Championship game, along with serving on the 2017 NCAA Final Four Phoenix Host Committee, well, he is ready to push start on a new era of racing in Arizona that could shape changes beyond the sport. Formula One last raced in Phoenix in 1991 on the downtown street circuit, which began in 1989. Now that track, roughly 2.32 miles, primarily wrapped around Washington and Jefferson Streets. After the race was discontinued, Formula One did not race in the U.S. again until the year 2000. While a similar route was considered, some of the modern modifications to the downtown area made a potential race difficult. Wright said, quote, "We quickly figured out that those circuits weren't great anymore because of the light rail that has since been added downtown, and a lot more operating businesses downtown would have conflicts with the race," unquote. But nonetheless, the city of Phoenix has been committed to the process since 2023, when the idea was first mentioned at the Portland E Prix in Oregon. The dream made sense, given the similarities in goals shared by Phoenix and Formula E. Sustainability remains the cornerstone of Formula E's mission. Since the conclusion of the league's fifth season in 2019, Formula E has added more races and still lowered carbon emissions by 41% per the 2023 sustainability report. Now, Phoenix has similar goals, pioneering the Waymo autonomous vehicle service in 2020. The city also advocates for the use of cleaner energy, making the Valley an ideal fit for a Formula E venue. Wright said, quote, "This race, unlike any other sporting event that we host, aligns perfectly with Phoenix's brand of manufacturing and developing clean technology, sustainability, and resourcefulness. This is about accelerating the use of electric vehicles, one race, one city at a time. We see this as an opportunity to shine a huge global spotlight on this region, on Arizona as a leader in clean technology and sustainability, unquote. Now, Wright's law firm, Dorsey & Whitney, has also been an advocate for the event. The firm represents a number of companies in the clean technology and microchip industries. Wright said, quote, "This is a sporting event that is about an electric vehicle, and we manufacture those right here. We manufacture the technology that goes into this here. We build the chips that drive them here. So it is totally on brand with who we are as a community and as an economy," unquote. Now, Phoenix hopes to follow the model that was set by the Miami E-Prix, which returned to the Formula E calendar this season to great success. The race engaged the local community with donations to local programs, a large crowd of energized fans, and a thrilling close finish to end the event. Miami's success can serve as a roadmap for Phoenix to follow in terms of supporting the community and bringing Formula E and keeping it for the long run. Wright said, quote, "I can't emphasize enough how hard they have worked to overcome obstacles and make this work. Within the city of Phoenix, it's really been a function of finding a location that lays out well for a race, has all the turns and runouts and things that make for an exciting race. These races require a lot of additional space for staging. You've got to build the garages, the pits, the grandstand. There's a big fan zone where this will activate. You think we've got a ton of area around Phoenix? But when you really drilled that down to find a place that's central, where it's easy for people to get to, there are not a ton of options," unquote. Well, Phoenix is an ideal fit for a sport and industry that only continues to skyrocket in growth. In Season 10, which concluded in 2024, Formula E's television audience grew by 35% to nearly 500 million cumulative viewers worldwide. The sport's social media following also increased by 20%. Despite being a relatively new endeavor, Formula E's popularity and excitement are speeding into the rearview mirror of its Formula One counterpart. Wright said, quote, "Formula One's been racing for almost 100 years, but Formula E is catching up really quickly. Also, the economic impact, they deliver about $100 million of economic impact wherever they race," unquote. So while the details have yet to be set in stone, there is plenty of reason for optimism for a new racing event on the roads of Phoenix very soon, adding to the city's reputation for bustling innovation and electric automobiles. And that's the article, Phoenix Close to Securing a Formula E Race in 2027. And the third article from the front page of the sports section is about football. Arizona embraces the rising hopes for team in 2025. This was written by Theo Mackey for the Arizona Republic. To find the last time that the Arizona Cardinals carried real expectations, the kind that render a season without playoffs a failure, you have to rewind 3 years, to the start of the 2022 season. That was back before Kyler Murray tore his ACL, before the Cliff Kingsbury era imploded, before a new regime was hired. It was before Josh Dobbs and Clayton Toon helped navigate a lost 2023, before the fleeting hope of last November gave way to the reality of December elimination. 3 years on the calendar, but a lifetime in the NFL. And that spot, finally, is where the Jonathan Gannon, Monty Austenfort era has arrived. When the Cardinals began training camp on July 23rd, they did so surrounded by a tangible belief that this season could be, and perhaps should be, different. More than anything, those expectations are external. You will hear more talk of the playoffs on sports talk radio and social media websites than inside the Cardinals' locker room. When he held his first news conference of training camp, Gannon spoke in his usual platitudes. I don't, man. Process, man. Process today. I'm worried about today, Gannon said. But even Gannon acknowledged that this year's team has an understanding of what it takes to win in the NFL. And that's what happens when a group has been together for 3 years and when its key players are no longer rookies. Gannon said, quote, I don't think they didn't feel that last year or the year before, but it is a heightened sense of awareness. We are in year three now, and we got what we need, unquote. Well, it's not hard to understand what that means. Year one was a wash, with Murray sidelined until November by his knee injury. Year two was still a work in process with a defense that lacked high-end talent, especially up front. But year three is different. The Cardinals have the league's 11th best offense, returning its entire starting lineup. They are overachieving, but they're overachieving, but undermanned defense was infused with three marquee free agents and five draft picks in the first five rounds. And in the locker room, the returning players see that. Marvin Harrison Jr. said, quote, just win. That's what it comes down to. This is the time. The time is now, unquote. Like his head coach, Harrison stopped short of labeling his goals. This wasn't Murray's news conference from a month ago, when the quarterback said that his prime looks like rings, but there were also no denying that the standard had changed. Harrison said, we know what our goals are. We didn't accomplish them last year. It's easier to do that because of the culture that Ossenfort and Gannon have fostered. Each year in the NFL, a handful of teams spend their summers mired in controversy. The Cincinnati Bengals have contract disputes with their first-round pick, Shamar Stewart, and their star edge rusher, Trey Hendrickson. Receiver Terry McLaurin hasn't shown up to the Washington Commanders' training camp as he holds out for a contract. Dallas Cowboys star Micah Parsons is publicly feuding with owner Jerry Jones. Now, the Cardinals, throughout their history, have been no strangers to that type of drama. But during Gannon's tenure, they have avoided it. Just this spring, they extended tight end Trey McBride before his impending free agency could turn into a controversy. Gannon said, quote, Monty's done a really good job, and owner Michael Bidwell has done a really good job to eliminate a lot of those for us. And when you can eliminate a lot of those, now you can concentrate on football and getting better, unquote. Well, that's the goal for training camp. The goal for the season, whether the Cardinals will admit it or not, is different. It is to bring the playoffs back to Arizona. And that was the article, Arizona Embraces the Rising Hopes for Team in 25. Well, before we leave the sports section, one more article. This is about NBA basketball. Guard Goodwin claimed off waivers, returns to Suns, by Dana Scott for the Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Suns have acquired guard Jordan Goodwin, who most recently was with the Los Angeles Lakers and formerly played for Phoenix. ESPN's Shams Charania first reported the news on July 23rd. Goodwin, who is 26, was claimed off waivers and agreed to a $2.3 million veteran minimum deal with only $25,000 guaranteed, and the remainder is fully protected if not waived by January 7th, per ESPN's NBA front office insider Bobby Marks. Goodwin was released by the Los Angeles Lakers alongside Shake Milton to bring in veteran guard Marcus Smart, the 2022 Defensive Player of the Year, signing him for their biannual exception for a two-year deal for $11 million. Now, during the 24-25 season, his fifth season, Goodwin averaged 5.6 points, 3.9 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 1 steal per game, and a shot a career-high 38% from three-pointers in 18.7 minutes for the Lakers. He's known for his defensive prowess and pushing the pace, but he's not considered a great outside shooter. Goodwin's career averages are 6.2 points, 3.8 boards, 2.4 assists, and 4-10, 3-23, 7-63 splits. Goodwin fills one of the two Suns' two remaining roster spots for 15 guaranteed deals and helps with their point guard void. He originally came to the Suns from Washington in the Bradley Beal trade in June of 2023. He was waived at the trade deadline in February 2023. He signed with the Memphis Grizzlies on a 10-day deal, and then he signed with the Lakers in September 2024. Now, Goodwin replaces Beal, who was bought out by the Suns on July 16th and then joined the LA Clippers. And that's guard Goodwin, claimed off waivers, returns to Suns. At 45 minutes past the hour, moving on over to the entertainment section, we're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. If you were born between March 21st and April 19th, that's the sign of Aries. Are you led by a heartfelt vision? Today's new moon in Leo asks you to trust the creative process. Build on inspiration. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, your identity is embarking on a journey of renewal. The Leo new moon sends you on a spiritual quest. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, expressing yourself may bring up hesitancy. Feeling cautious about maneuvering the collective? Well, find your flow. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, it is time to empower your self-worth. The new moon in Leo pushes you to transform fear into success. For Leo, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, is something powerful coming to light? A momentary disruption facilitates an illumination of consciousness. For you fellow Virgos out there with birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, inner alchemy is underway. The Leo new moon asks you to face what is buried. Bring it into the light. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, doors opening to shine in a group environment? Well, share your passions. Form artistic alliances. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, it's time to make ambitious moves. Does this require a disruption of routine? Well, priorities are switching. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, are you rocketing into new territory? A dream may get off the ground. Life is expanding. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, becoming a butterfly is an intentional process. Weave your cocoon. A metamorphosis is underway. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, partnerships are ready for a new beginning. How can you get creative with the arrangement? Well, strike up a deal. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Are you ready to work? Discipline your passions to bring abundance your way. Determination suits you. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren in her column, Dear Abby. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, I'm a 47-year-old male who is 20 days from being divorced. For the past 3 months, I've been dating a woman I've known for 26 years. We love each other and plan to be married. We have great times when we are together, but struggle on the phone or with texting. I'm not sure why this is, but she says it's because we need to be together all the time. We generally see one another on weekends. She says she has a tough time and cries a lot when I'm not around. My question is this normal? If I don't see her for 2 days, she gusses that she missed me so much, whereas I miss her, but it's not a big deal to me. We aren't married now, so I'm not in the frame of mind until we are. What can we do? Signed, Navigating Love in Florida. And Abby responds, Near Navigating, what your lady friend is telling you may seem like a protestation of devotion, but it could instead be a red flag. Her discomfort at being apart could eventually become smothering. She's obviously emotionally needy. Although you have discussed marriage, please be sure the two of you have premarital counseling before proposing anything more than a warm friendship. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, I've been a little sad lately. The reason is that my best friend is acting weird. It makes me wonder if our friendship is slowly going away. Throughout our friendship, we've always jokingly made fun of each other. But lately, it seems that anything I say makes it awkward, and she hasn't been wanting to talk to me as often or acting the same way she did before. I'm afraid we're not going to be friends much longer, which scares me. How do I fix our friendship without asking for it up front and without being weird? Signed, Her Bestie in California. Dear Bestie, you may be scared, but the only way you may be able to repair your friendship is to tell her how you are feeling. Because you sense she is distancing herself, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain by being honest. A smart way to start the conversation would be to ask if you may have offended her in some way with your jokes, because if you did, they were not intended to be hurtful. And our next letter goes, Dear Abby, how does one overcome a fear of heights? I have had it from the time I was a little girl. There was a bridge I had to cross walking home from school. I had to look down at my feet to cross it. I recently purchased a condominium on the 16th floor in a high-rise building. I love the view, but I'm afraid to walk out on my balcony. How do I overcome this? Signed, Up High in Georgia. And Abby responds, Dear High Up High, you are far from the only person who has a fear of heights. Consider installing some waist-high plants in front of the patio railing. This may allow you to enjoy your view without your knees wobbling. If you try this, do not look directly down. I speak from experience. And don't forget, you can always contact Abigail Van Buren by going to her website, www.dearabby.com. At 53 minutes past the hour, let's take a look at some comics. In the comic strip Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall, Dagwood and Blondie are sitting in their easy chairs. Dagwood's got his feet up on the ottoman. He's looking at the TV set. And from the TV, we hear actor Lance Hoderman whisked his wife Mona McDeva to Monaco on his private jet. And Dagwood says, Wow, old Lance knows how to live. And Blondie says, I'll say. And then in the next frame, the TV says, They dined on luscious caviar and drank champagne poured from a diamond-encrusted goblet. And Dagwood goes, Show off. And in the last frame, Dagwood looks at Blondie and says, Would you settle for burgers in the backyard? And that was Blondie. And in the comic strip Zits, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borkman, in the first frame, Jeremy's parents are sitting at the table, and Jeremy and Pierce's girlfriends are, they lay plates down in front of the parents. And one of them says, Judges, Dijon and I present salmon croquettes with Creole aioli. And Dad goes, Whoa. In the next frame, Jeremy plops in and says, Pierce and I made a stunning Pringles salad with hot dog medallions. And Mom says to Jeremy, suddenly I'm full. And Pierce says to Dad, Be careful. My nose ring might be in there. And that was Zitz. And in the comic strip Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, the first frame, Dad and Hammy are going, have just passed the ticket booth, and Hammy says, I love coming to the ballpark, Dad. And Dad says, Me too. And the next frame, as they get to their seats, Hammy says, I love the hot dogs, the nachos, the ice cream, and the tiny batting helmets. And Dad says, well, don't forget the best part. And the last frame, Hammy says, you mean the overpriced souvenirs? And Dad says, no, the game. And that was Baby Blues. And in the comic of Dennis the Menace, Dennis is coming in the front door of the house. Mom's sitting in a chair with a knitting on her lap. And Dennis says, Mr. Wilson is so grumpy, I don't think he even has a funny bone. And that was Dennis the Menace, drawn by Hank Ketchum. Well, before we go, we ought to wish happy birthday to some celebrities who are celebrating today. We have actor Chris Sarandon, turning 83. Comedian Michael Richards, turned 76. Actress Linda Carter, turned 74. Director Gus Van Sant, turned 73. Actress and singer Kristen Chenoweth, turns 57 today. Actress and singer Jennifer Lopez, turns 56 today. Actress Rose Byrne, turns 46. Actress Elizabeth Moss, turns 43. Actress Anna Paquin turns 43. Actor Mara Wilson turns 38. Conservationist and TV host Bindi Irwin turns 27 today. And actress Kaylee Spaney turns 27 today. Congratulations to these celebrities. May they enjoy their birthday. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. You have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, July 24th, 2025. I hope you have a great day today, and I hope you keep on listening. Bye for now.